Hello, and welcome to another episode of Alec Mappa Hot Mess with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist. I'm Alec Mappa. I'm an actor and comedian. I live in Hollywood.
And I'm Matthew Dempsey. I'm a multicultural counselor and psychotherapist.
More importantly, your hair is a work of art.
Oh, thank you
look
so
at,
much.
Look
it's
at
very
it.
Kind.
Folks, you know, if you're listening in the car, you're not getting a visual. It's like a perfect swoop. Is that with a hairdryer?
Yes,
brush?
It is. Yes.
It's beautiful. So what would happen if you didn't do that? It would get all curly?
Yeah, it's not
would
very curly.
Would it be curly? Wavy?
Nah, it's kind of wavy, but not in a, like a cute, you know, its own way. It just kind of goes all over the place. So I just help, you know, just kind of direct it a little bit.
Oh, it's
but, you
very
know,
nice.
That's all.
It's very, it's, and the way the, I'm just going to talk, I'm not going to narrate your hair. The way the gray is in it now, you're like Doctor Strange. You're very, you could play Doctor Strange at Disneyland. Anyway, I just got back from Hawaii.
I was jealous.
I was guest starring on Hawaii NCIS. I was there for 5 days, Matthew. I worked one.
How was the weather?
So, glorious. It's Hawaii. So it just rains and then it stops and then it rains. And then sometimes it's sunny and it's raining.
Yeah.
But it's like 80 degrees out. I did nothing but eat. I didn't exercise once. And my trainer this morning was like, what happened?
Oh, like, it's the holidays. Melikilikimaka.
I lost a little bit of strength, but this was a dream gig. This was a bingo. And I was telling everybody on set, you know, you've all hit the jackpot, right? You're filming a series in Hawaii. So,
that's amazing.
My point is that I have
what is
one.
It?
I was there and then I texted my husband. I'm not drinking, right? So I didn't get into any mischief. I was very, very good. I think about sex all the time.
Uh-huh.
Like, it just occurred to me, like, while I was sitting in the lobby of the hotel and going to the airport and just clocking everybody, I'm thinking about sex all the time. Is that normal?
Well, okay, when you say thinking about sex, specifically, what are you thinking about?
I'm like, if, like, a hot guy crosses my, is like, you know, I see them.
Right.
I'm thinking, yeah, you're naked and your pants are off. And, I'm just thinking about sex. This is a mental health podcast, by the way, folks. If you're just tuning in for the first time, welcome. If you're a return listener, don't forget to download and subscribe. Thank you for being here. So
how often is this? You say all the time. So how often is it that you're
all the time?
Sex?
All the time. Mm-hmm. All the time. Like I think that I don't think I'm alone in this sentiment, but I think about how often do you think about sex? You don't think
don't,
about it that
I
much.
I don't think about it all the time, but I think about it often enough. You know,
yeah,
few you're, times, well, several you, times a day.
You live in West Hollywood. You're walking down the street. You're seeing attractive men everywhere. And
yeah, but you know what? If I see guys that I'm attracted to, I'm not automatically trying to imagine them naked or having sex with them. It's almost like I'm just kind of like, oh, I just really like the way they look. I don't know.
Really? Wow. Maybe
I mean, sometimes it is.
You never look at a guy and go like, Oh, I'm sorry. I was supposed to say, would you be comfortable sharing with...
I appreciate the invitation.
Whether or not sexually objectify people on site.
Well, that's already been happening. So we've really kind of broken that wall down, haven't we?
I just talked about your hair. I didn't talk about your body.
I know. It's still objectification.
I didn't talk about your Instagram.
Yes. Thank you. Okay. But for you, has sex been a way that you validated yourself? Has that been a way that you've, you know...
Oh, yeah. No, this
a currency?
I was thinking it had a lot to do with my old sex and love addiction stuff.
Yeah,
that
course.
I was always like, beep, 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 beep. Right. Always kind of looking on my screen about like, and then I forget that it's a spectrum, that not everybody's sexual. Like there are some people who just aren't sexual. I mean, you just said you're not thinking about ripping anybody's clothes off. You're just thinking, I like the way they look. I'm thinking past that.
I mean, for sure. I mean, kind of in, I think probably to the far extreme, there's people who are, I shouldn't say extreme, but like kind of on one end of the spectrum, there are people who are asexual, who don't really experience any of those kind of sexual thoughts or desires, things like that. Are not interested in having sex. It's not like, you know, a binary thing either. It's that or it's all the time. Obviously it's kind of it's a whole spectrum. And so everybody kind of falls anywhere along that spectrum. I guess my question for you is the amount to which you're thinking about sex, does it feel intrusive? Does it feel problematic? Are you judging it? Like, what's the thing?
No, I think I just noticed it because I was alone for 5 days. I mean, right. I have friends there and I had dinner with people, but for the most part, I was walking around and I was alone with my thoughts and I was like, wow, dude, you think about sex a lot.
Yeah. Okay. So that, well, yeah. That's the observation, right? Like that's just data for you. The observation.
That's the
that
observation.
You're, the observation. Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of thoughts that are coming up about sex. What's the meaning that you attach to that?
I'm wondering like if that is like typical or does that seem like a lot? Like, is it typical for-
So you're questioning if there's something wrong with it. Let's say I kind of
want to know where I am on the spectrum.
Okay, but let's say on the spectrum, you're to the far end where it's a lot. What would that mean to you if you thought about sex much more than the average person? What would that mean to you?
Nothing. It would just be useful information. It'd be like, okay,
what would you use it for? What would
that,
it mean?
That lines up. I would get a sash and a crown. and it would say, Miss thinks about sex the most 2021.
Well, how wonderful. I love how non-judgmental you're assessing your own sexual desires because it's very easy. Listen, it's very easy for us, especially, you know, kind of in this country and you know, this culture for us to have so much shame around sex, especially as, you know, kind of queer people too, to have so much shame around that because, you know, like we're rooted in these puritanical beliefs. That's just kind of the way that our culture has been set up. And so anything that operates outside of the very narrow window of having sex, you know, while married to someone of the opposite sex or gender for the sake of procreation, mm-hmm. like if it's not mm-hmm. that narrow thing, anything outside mm-hmm. of that leaves us really susceptible to shame, to think that there's something wrong or kind of sinful about it.
All right. So you don't think about it as much as I do. I want to say hi to all the people who are listening out there. I'm getting very nice notes on Instagram and reviews on Apple iTunes that people listen to us. Aww. I want to say hi to my friend Amy Hill out in Hawaii, who never misses the show. Our friend Quinn Cummings, who is on and always listens to the show. So thank you so much. Yes. We did start this podcast as a way of talking about mental health to kind of destigmatize it. And I've learned a lot from listening. I know you don't listen to the show.
I do listen to the show. I don't listen to every show, but I listen to every show because we do the show together. Like we're the ones who create it. So I hear, I pay attention.
My friend Amy, who listens to the show, was raving about you.
Aww.
And she said that you're very good at disseminating. I like that word. Disseminating.
Dissemination.
Disseminating. information in a way that is academic but not patronizing.
Oh, that's like high praise. Yeah, that's really what I try to go for.
She said you seem very relatable and you when you talk about diagnoses or clinical things, you do it in a way that doesn't feel like you're condescending. Like I'm like I would be if I got two masters from Columbia.
Well, I love that. You know, one of my favorite quotes is from Albert Einstein, and he said, if you can't explain it simply, you don't know it well enough. So anybody who's a little highbrow and, you know, use all kinds of clinical jargon, it's like, okay, what are you using this information for except to just kind of boost your ego then? Because most people aren't going to get it.
Right. Is that what he said after he came up with E equals MC squared?
I'm not sure where on the timeline that one popped up.
You're quoting Albert Einstein. So I came back and I, you know, I was thinking about it because we have a really great guest today.
Yeah.
We have one of the fun drag queens from, well, they're all fun, but one of the especially fun drag queens from RuPaul's Drag Race season 12, Rakim Sakura is here today and is going to talk to us about their sexual experiences.
Yeah.
How was your Thanksgiving? I want to touch base with you. I want to catch up before we get into the deep conversation.
My Thanksgiving was great. I have so much to be grateful for, and I had a lot of great friends to share that day with. So, and the food was wonderful.
Where'd you go? Did you go anyplace?
I went to
Did you go to Lake Tahoe, that lake house?
You were talking about so many things. I know. No, I didn't go to Tahoe. I went a couple blocks from my apartment over to my other friend's apartment. And we all brought dishes over and had a lovely Thanksgiving. How was yours?
Great. I was with my in-laws. You get that red face when I start asking you personal questions, and I'm not supposed to do that. I was supposed to maintain a professional thing. No, I don't mind the personal questions.
I'm just like, where are we going?
Yeah. Where are we going with this? I just want to touch base with you because it's been a while. We didn't have a show last week, and I feel like I haven't seen you in a long time. I actually haven't seen you in nearly 2 years, even though we talk every week. Listen, let's get to our guests.
Yes, please.
Rock'em Sakura, and we'll talk to them all about sex and how much they think about it after these important messages.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
We're really looking forward to talking to our guest today. You may know her from her turn on season 12 of RuPaul's Drag Race.
She is a singer, actor, drag performer, and YouTube sensation. Please welcome the one and only Rock'em Sakura.
Hi.
Yay.
Thank you for having me. I brought a prostate massager.
Yes.
Let's get right into it. Talk about sex. It kind of looks like a duck, but it sounds like a bee. Watch.
All right. Okay. So show me the shape of that again, because it looks like a misshapen.
It's S for Sakura.
Okay. So it hooks up. So is that the bottom?
Yeah. How does that go?
Does the bottom part go in your booty hole or with the top part?
Imagine this is my butthole in my prime. It still opens and closes normally. Okay.
It's not like a torn pocket. It's like
not anymore. Okay. It's not like a pita you dropped on the ground. All right.
It's not like a hot dog in a hallway.
It knocks on the door three times like this. It goes, and then I go, hello. And it goes, may I come in? May I come in? And I'm like, all right, but this is an Asian household, so take off your shoes.
Take off your shoes.
So then it takes off its shoes, and then it goes in here, right? Okay. Now it's in the first chamber. It's in the first chamber here. Oh,
this is like, we've got all Harry Potter now. There's chambers. There's a chamber of secrets. Okay. Okay. So it's in the first chamber.
So while it's here, I'm awkwardly trying to put it in while standing up alone in an empty hallway. Okay. Mind you. Okay.
Yes.
So I push it in as hard as I can. I'm not relaxed or anything like that. Okay. It feels very funny. It goes into the second chamber.
Oh, it keeps going.
It goes. Yeah. So while we're right here, this is on my perineum underneath like my balls, the grendel.
That's on your taint.
On my taint. This goes to the end of the first chamber. This goes in the second chamber. And this part right here, massages the prostate.
Oh, see, Matt,
what parts vibrate? What parts vibrate? All of them?
All of them.
The whole thing. This part comes out.
Uh-huh.
Oh my God. Okay. It doesn't come out.
Okay.
But it goes this section, but everything else is by transitive property.
Wow. Okay. See, I'm dumb. I would have stopped at the first chamber.
I would have too.
And then had a dangle out.
I wasn't sure what the rest of the hook was for.
Yeah, you're my kind of guest. You get into it right away.
Perfect.
And, but I still want to maintain boundaries. This is a safe space. You're with Matt, who is a brilliant psychotherapist with two master's degrees. So you're comfortable kind of speaking about sex and your experiences as a sex worker.
Yeah, totally.
Awesome.
I was like, Matt, you're a sex worker too? Wow.
Can you believe- so confused.
Wait, did I say you were a sex worker?
No, I wasn't exactly sure what the what this opening was.
Oh, okay. Matt is a sex worker as well. No, I'm kidding. No, he's not. He's a very expensive therapist with a thriving practice.
I'm very comfortable with talking about everything. No boundaries, no limits. Matthew, you're a psychotherapist. Are those two separate words, or is it like the same title?
It's all one word, the same title, yes.
Okay, all right, just making sure.
Psychological counselor and therapist, yes.
Because I'm a psychotherapist too, but it's two separate things, no master degree. Just Craigslist is the only difference between the two of us.
A kinship we share, yes, I felt that.
I've always wondered with sex workers, because you're not the first sex worker we've had on the show. Mm-hmm. It all happens. Like, what was your journey? Was it out of necessity, or was it out of curiosity, or was it you just felt you had a natural acumen for this type
of
work?
How did it begin?
Okay, so for me, I was like, let's go like before the whole sex working and everything, mm-hmm. too. Right. I was working in fast food for about 10 years.
Oh, gosh.
And I, at the same time, for about 10 years, I was with the same partner, monogamous partner, who was bisexual, leaning more towards straight. Mm-hmm. We didn't have too much sex. He hated my drag, was a very kind of like verbally and mentally abusive relationship.
Oh, I went out with him.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. I remember. He has a thing for Filipino people.
Yeah.
So, so after I got out of that relationship, I broke up with him and I quit my job and I wanted to do drag full time.
Okay.
So I left my job and I moved to San Francisco, because at the time and place, it was like, oh, if I move to San Francisco, that's where all the drag is. That's where all the gay things are happening. That's okay. Where I can really get my life together.
Mm. Where were you coming from?
San Jose, which is like an hour away from San Francisco. So not that far physically, but emotionally, mentally, it was very, very far.
Going to the bigger city. Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I started to pursue drag full time. And I didn't realize that in San Francisco, they pay you like $30 a gig and like $30 a gig with tips, and no one tips in San Francisco. So, I mean, I love San Francisco, but we don't get paid diddly doo doo for any drag shows there. So it was hard to do drag full time. So one of my friends who was in sex work actually introduced me to the idea and the concept. And for me, I thought it was a great place to go from where I was doing.
How was it introduced to you? Like, what was the way it was pitched?
You're like, girl, I see that light bill and the past due notice. Are they saying like, this is an easier way?
Pretty much. Yeah. I was telling them like how expensive it was to be in San Francisco. Like, I couldn't afford any new wigs, new drag. I was constantly doing gigs and brunch gigs. And my friend was like, hey, if you, this is what I do. I don't know if you're comfortable with it, but this is what I do. I can introduce you to this kind of like sex work stuff that I do if you're comfortable with it. And for me, one of the ways it was introduced was, he was like, the only thing is like, you have to like having sex with older men. And for me, that's not a draw at all. Like, I really don't discriminate against people. And I actually really do like having sex with older men for various different reasons.
Okay. We'll get into that.
But I forgot the question, but that's pretty
how was
much
it, how was it how introduced to you? Yeah. And then how does that lead to the first gig? Like, what are the mechanics of it?
Oh, basically what happened was, after they introduced me to it, I got registered onto a site that a lot of escorts, a lot of sex workers are on.
Okay.
I made a profile. I took flattering pictures at the time I was living in an artist commune with 26 other people. I know. Oh, and I still couldn't afford the rent. I was on, I was on the roof in like a jock strap, and I was like, all right, timed photos on my Samsung Galaxy. This is the height of poverty. So, my first picture was me in a thong against a wall with my butt cheeks spread apart, you know, just get right to the point.
Yes. Brass tacks.
All
right.
Yes. Yes.
I create a website, and I kind of, as a drag queen, you kind of know how to market yourself, and you kind of know like what people want. So I think my name was like, oh my God, my name, I just remembered, my name was AZN Bubble Butt. It was AZN Bubble Butt.
What does that stand for? I'm going to puzzle on that all afternoon.
I think it's because I was turning 24 to 25 and I was aging. So AGN was taken.
It sounds as if you're already the person at 24 who has no hesitations about this, has no kind of like, you don't have like all the middle class bourgeoisie, you know, that I would have in pursuing something like this. You're like, right. Totally. Is that who you were from the beginning?
Well, I was raised by the streets. And by that, I mean, my growing up very early, my whole childhood, my mother was addicted to crystal meth.
I'm sorry.
So she was, it's okay. It happens. She still has some, if you want some. But you know, it's all fun. It's all fun. No, it's not fun. But she's sober, so it's all good now.
Okay.
So yeah, we have a great relationship now. It's all fun. Yeah. It's good to talk about. But we had a very I had a very tumultuous childhood. We were very poor. I couldn't eat every day.
Okay.
It was one of those things you think would keep me skinny, but it didn't. So we
was it just you and your mom?
Yeah, I was about to ask the same thing.
It was me and my mom, my older brother, and my little sister. Okay, so it was a lot. My father was like in and out of prison. Mm-hmm.
Where are you in the birth order?
Middle.
I am middle.
You're
am
the middle.
I'm the sexy prostitute Jam Brady of the situation.
And how old are you when you're kind of aware of your economic situation that this is tough times? And how old are you when that's happened? And you realize that your mother has a problem.
I think I was like 12 when I realized that not everyone drank powdered milk and that their mom shoots up in the bathroom. I think it was that time. It was just when people, you know, it's that budding time, you know, your balls drop and you're like, why am I drinking powdered milk?
Right.
Yeah. You said you were raised by the streets, and that was also something that contributed to you having just kind of more of an openness to sex and your sexuality. So how does
the house when I was 15.
Okay.
Because my mom stopped referring to me by name and would only refer to me by like the
AZN bottom.
No,
she would AZN bubble butt.
Yeah.
She would only call me Rock'em, and it was just like, I'm not performing right now. No, she would. Can I say the gay slur on this?
You can say anything you wish.
Okay, my mom would call me faggot. My mom would stop calling me by my name. She would only call me faggot.
Okay.
And that was after she, you know, found out that I was gay. My computer from Rena Center outed me.
Yeah.
So she would only call me that. So I left and I was homeless for a bit. And
a bit, 6 months, a bit, a month, a bit.
About a year.
About a year.
Almost a full year. So it was jumping from house to house, jumping from friends, sleeping in out of the park, going to school, eating only at school, things like that.
So you're still going to school during this time while you're homeless. And
And I'm not telling anyone.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I smelled before and I'm going to smell after.
Are you couch surfing or are you homeless in San Jose?
Both. So it's surfing with a mixture of like sleeping in the park.
What made you decide to keep maintaining your kind of like routine with school as opposed to, I don't know, just going off, doing your own thing, trying to find money elsewhere?
Yeah, two meals a day.
Oh, got it.
That was it. It was the one place where I could get a meal for like 20, 30 cents a day or even for free.
Understood. Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's also just like a big network of resources. Honestly, I would be in a different place if I didn't go to school and I didn't have the support of my friends at the time.
That's amazing. So after a year of homelessness, where do you end up? Who are you with?
Then I end up with my partner who I was with for 10 years.
And is he the manager of the Gas and Sip or wherever you are or the Burger King or the... Yeah.
No, he was the manager of being unemployed and middle class and in a white family. So he had the more means than I could, you know, than I had.
All right.
So I got to live with him and basically he got to take care of me. So there was a lot of like that with the dynamic of
it was a very paternalistic relationship. Do you feel it was controlling?
Yeah, for sure. It was very much like I'm a parakeet. Mm-hmm. And when the blanket goes over the cage, it's time to sleep. And when the blanket comes off, it's time to sing.
Wow.
So from that, like kind of like when you live your life constantly trying to survive, you learn survival tactics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And part of it too is dealing with shame and dealing with all of these other things. You kind of throw shame. You kind of throw shame out the window eventually. It just becomes a non-factor. If part of your survival involves you not having shame or not having hesitation in the like with your own body, policing your own body, then that's what you have to do.
Okay, let me ask you this question. So in a situation like that, especially, you know, kind of at such a young age too, is it in a way that you're able to recognize, process your shame and move through it in kind of an expedited way? Or is it almost like kind of a stuffing of it down because you just need to move forward and do what you need to do?
Right. You're just trying to get through the day.
I think part of it is definitely stuffing all of it down because for sure. I'm sure you see a lot of people who they think they put it away, they expedite it and everything, but it just comes up later.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Right.
So really what it is for me is all of those feelings kind of get, for a lot of times they kind of get like packed into a box, and then we're going to pick them up maybe when we're having that midlife crisis.
Right. All right. Like, because this is, you don't have the luxury or the privilege at that particular moment to go through that. So you pack it up, you set it aside because you need to survive. You have to move forward and do what you need to do.
And I think that's a really common occurrence. And it's not like I walk around thinking about my shame issues all the time. But what I found in the conversations we have with people on the show is that these issues, regardless, like no one is exempt. Like it's going to come out somewhere.
Yes. Yes.
Either it's going to manifest in the kind of relationships we have or our interactions with coworkers or family. Yes. How do you feel specifically those issues came up for you? How did they come out? How do they leak out?
Which ones?
You said shame in particular. Was it shame about being queer, shame about being a sex worker?
It was, for me, like a lot of shame as a queer person kind of manifested as a child, and kind of just, here's one thing that kind of came up while I was on RuPaul's Drag Race was my mother used to blame her addiction on her kids, but she would blame her addiction on me.
Oh, that's a lot.
So I love my mother. I love her very dearly. For a lot of my childhood, I didn't get to grow up with her because I grew up with my grandparents. Mm-hmm. When I finally got into her care, because my grandmother died, my grandpa went right out the door.
Yeah.
She kind of like dropped this whole like, oh, I do drugs because of you sort of thing. So I love my mother.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You didn't deserve that. I mean, that's... No kid deserves that, to hear that from a parent. And that's really tough. That's a big thing to get over. Did you really personalize that? How old were you when you heard that?
I'd say I was like 12 or 13. The first time she said it was, So it was like very early into her taking care of us, but she had a problem. Like as an adult, you realize that your parents are just kids taking care of kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just kids taking care of kids. This is why straight people need to stop having sex. And you know what I mean? It's just too easy.
It's a lot.
They can have a baby tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm a parent and I planned on it and I work on it and we studied to be parents and it's still hard. Yes. So I don't know how anybody's flying by the seat of their pants. Now, I asked about how your issues manifested because for me, as a Filipino kid growing up in a very religious household, how my shame manifested, and I didn't realize it until years later, was in my sex and love addiction. I felt so much shame about who I was as a person. I sought validation sexually, externally, and I thought that that was going to save me, and I did that until that no longer worked for me. But it sounds as if... okay, so you're in San Francisco and you have enough street savvy at this point to be like, this isn't a big deal. I can do this. Am I correct in saying that? And totally. Was there, and I always wonder with sex workers, and we'll get to the first experience, is there a disconnect of like, okay, I'm at work now. This isn't
For me, there wasn't too much of a disconnect, honestly, if I'm thinking about it right now. I do like, I mean, a lot of gay people like, I like transactional sex. I like it. It's fun. It's cute. It gets rid of those urges, desires really quickly. I can move on. But one of the aspects that I really, honestly, and I still miss it, I would still be doing sex work if it wasn't for having the fame spotlight constantly on me, was I loved interacting with people and listening to people and talking to especially older men who may or may not feel like treated differently within the gay community too. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of men who hire people for sex work don't feel desirable, attractive in the gay community. They feel like they've lived past their expiration date. And I'm a very empathetic person. I like to listen. I like to talk and I like to comfort. I'm basically I'm Matthew, but without two master's degrees and I have sex with you.
Well, that's,
do you ever penetrate a psychotherapist? That's what's going on here. You ever nut in your therapist's butt? That's kind of what's going on.
So you didn't have a disconnect. You kind of like went in deeper.
Well, but it's interesting. Deeper, literally, quite literally, but also emotionally. And it sounds like the way that you're describing it, there is really kind of like a nurturing and a caretaking thing that happens for you too when you're with some of these guys.
I appreciate that. Yeah, definitely. Part of it is in my last relationship, I was very much the nurturer and the caretaker.
Yes.
So to have these transactional kind of romps with nurturing and caretaking, but also being able to get out of it really quick.
Yeah.
Was therapeutic to me because I was just trying to get out of my codependency from my last relationship.
Oh my God. Well, like, I'm glad you're even using that word because all of this really, it seems like it just kind of, it makes sense in terms of what your experiences have been to have the experience where you're bouncing from your grandparents, then to your mom with all of the addiction and all of the abuse that can happen there, that it's very common for, you know, kind of, you know, children or family members of people like that, then to learn that their value is almost rooted in their ability to take care of this kind of whirlwind, right? And so then you can kind of find yourself repeating those same dynamics, those same patterns in romantic relationships, even in your work relationships as a sex worker. You're not even, you know, just having sex for the payment of it. There's also this other kind of transaction that's happening where you're nurturing and you're caretaking those people too. So, it, you know, it kind of, again, kind of replicates that same thing.
I also did appreciate there were certain certain clients that you would get in sex work, and they would be, they're pretty famous or they would have a lot of money, and they would take care of you. So every now and then I would love to be treated like the baby, you know? So I used to have a client, he would get, he used to like, he would have a whole floor in a giant apartment building in San Francisco. He had art pieces from all over the world, a great view of the city from his apartment, just like a beautiful, like makeout chair. After he would like throat bang me for like 45 minutes, I would be like, you know what I'm saying?
Also known as love.
Yeah, love. Once that was over, he would literally take me to the most expensive restaurants in San Francisco.
Aww.
Wow. Everywhere. Because a lot of
some pretty woman stuff happening here.
I know. Yeah. How come you didn't end up with Richard Gere? Yeah. I would have been like, this is my bedroom over here on this part of the floor. Are you still with him?
Well, let's just say I used to have a hamster and I don't now. So.
Hey, whoa.
It's always a hamster thing. Yeah.
He neither confirmed nor denied that it was Richard Gere. Yeah.
Let's ask the vet. Wow. I mean, doctor.
Because I was about to say, it sounds like you have a really emotionally, it sounds as if you had a very emotionally intimate relationship with a lot of these men. And did any of them ever cross over into like, oh, this is,
ooh, good question. You
know? Yeah.
Not really. Yeah. I don't really want to talk. That's the one thing. I don't want to talk about that one aspect.
Okay, that's the boundary.
That's
okay,
the one.
Your eyes did shift from side to side as if you were judging it.
Very good.
Okay.
Communication.
It's Gavin Newsom. It's somebody famous. It's Tom Cruise. He's right over to the side. And you are living in his bubblegum palace in this Technicolor room. He keeps you in a bottle like Genie, like Major Nelson.
I was trying to get that pretty woman situation every single day of my life. I'd be like,
yeah,
I wonder if someone could change my life.
Right.
I do everything but kiss on the lips.
Take me to the opera. Yeah, right. Exactly.
But for me, I did have a couple of like romantic stints in this work. And I still see some of my clients, just not as clients. I still see them. We still have
name names,
romps and everything.
name names.
Gavitt. No,
kidding. No, I've never.
But I still see them and I still have that sort of aspect with them. But I remember one client that I was like, oh, I hope this turns into something was he was a client from Brazil. He would hire me for a month and he hired me for a month because do you see this bottle of spray paint? Yeah. Imagine two of these stacked on top of each other.
Oh, gotcha.
So that is what he was given to work with. So he would book me for the month so that if I ended
And it would take a whole month to like get to the second chamber.
No, it'd be like the first day. It'd be like the first day would be like, all right, I'm probably good. I'm probably loosened for the rest of the month.
Got it.
So he would like get the whole month so that we could kind of like go slow. By slow, yeah. I mean like three times a day, every single day. Yeah. So he gave me like thousands and thousands of dollars.
I should hope so. Yeah. Hazard pay. Because I'm 5'4", and if a guy's really big, it's like parallel parking a bus. Like to do all those chambers, it's like moving a couch into a one bedroom apartment in the East Village. It is like there's some maneuvering involved.
Exactly.
So you're saying that you almost had a relationship with month long Brazil?
Pretty much, yeah. The main thing was that it was just so hard for him to come down every single month, or not every single month, but like come down consistently and just visit me and talk with me. He was great though. He would start off with a song and then one, two, another song, and then three, take a shower, sleep in the bed. And I always remember there was a painting above the bedroom and it was a monkey in like a medieval outfit with a lute.
Okay.
And
I love that artist. That's a really cool artist. They do like a monkey. I just know because I have fakes hanging in my hallway.
Yeah, of course.
This artist, I forget the name, addresses people as royals, as people of a royal court. And they're usually orangutans or chimpanzees. It's very cute.
You weren't fucking with me. That was real.
No, that was real.
So this is real monkey and a monkey with a lute. This is a thing.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Here we go.
You're pretty. You're so pretty. You're a very pretty lady. So you're doing this to support your drag career.
Yeah.
Are the wigs getting better? Are the gigs becoming more affordable? Do you have a place to live? Does it liberate you financially?
It liberates me in a lot of ways, actually. Okay. Part of it too was moving to San Francisco. I felt very kind of gross because living in the Castro or living near the Castro, there's so many sexually attractive men in like a very like white, cis, muscly sort of way that kind of like makes you feel a little bit weird about being
a brown person,
like a girly looking brown person.
So it's like a monolithic in the Castro still?
Yeah, it still feels that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a racist that owns like three or four buildings in there and we just can't seem to, but Hamburger Mary's there is owned by a known racist.
Really?
Don't support them. Don't go to Toad Hall. Don't go to the Badlands in San Francisco. Racist. Mm. We were calling him out by name during the Black Lives Matter movement. But
was he the one who used to like, they had a racist door policy? Like only white people were being let into
I think so.
The bar. Yeah.
Really? I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But
so moving to San Francisco, you felt gross being around the Castro and then
doing the sex work actually helped kind of boost my ego and self-esteem in a lot of ways, because if I kind of like broke it apart and was like, someone saw a picture of me, looked at my bio and said, this person is cute enough for me to hire for transactional stuff, like to pay and quantify, like put money in and have sex with them. So it helped with that. It also,
because wouldn't that be mortifying, Matthew, if you put an ad and like nobody was like, no, pass.
Exactly.
It's a hard pass for me. No, thank you. I saw your ad and the answer's no.
Yeah. Sometimes people would message, they're like, I saw your ad and you need to take a better picture.
Well, listen, I've worked with sex workers over the years too. And I remember one in particular who I used to work with years ago, and he was talking about the experience of being an aging sex worker and how challenging that was, because when he first started, he was young, he was cute, he got a lot of attention, he got a lot of clients, it was not a problem. And then over the years, he's like, Matt, one day I woke up and I just looked in the mirror and I thought, who the fuck is this old man? And it was just kind of like from then on, he could just tell that he really was not getting the same number of clients. And
he's not getting the daddy gigs. He's not getting, not a currency in the sex worker world.
He wasn't getting
it
in the same way. And he could see kind of like some of the looks of disappointment when clients would walk in and see him in person and that kind of thing. And he said it was really challenging.
It feels like drag gigs and acting gigs where there's always someone younger, someone fitter, and someone prettier than you just around the corner.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of those things that you could just kind of, it's part of the industry and you just, I mean, you kind of have to accept it, or you have to make it a part of you. You have to like really embrace who you are as a person, performer, whatever,
yeah,
in order to not just save yourself mentally, but keep yourself booked, because no one wants someone who's clinging on to a past.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, let me ask you this question, because I think you're talking about a number of things that are really fascinating in terms of like how you are understanding yourself in the world, how you value yourself, that kind of stuff, you know? And when you're growing up with an addict for a parent, when you're homeless, you know, as a queer person, as a sex worker, as a performer, there's so many different ways that you can learn how to value yourself really irrationally, right? Like as if like, you know, caring for your mom or having to be that kind of cheerleader in any kind of way, or, you know, being a sex worker and getting attention for being cute, or giving the sex that you can give, or being a performer and doing what you can do there. So how have you been able to not over invest into those things as any kind of real sense of what makes you valuable, and find other ways where you're able to have a deeper sense that your value is inherent and not rooted in any of that stuff?
Well, I just look at Instagram followers. I just look at the number right there. I just look at all of those optics.
I look for external validation everywhere I can.
Social media. Yeah.
What I do is I just take loads bareback anonymously. And then at the end of the month, I just drop them all into a bucket and I look at the ounces.
Yeah.
I go, ah, that's how much validation.
There we are. Yeah.
That sounds like a very reasonable plan.
Yes.
I'm a person who believes that you should measure your own self-worth. If you can't not value measure your value externally, if you just can't not do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Measure your value with just like other people's, like one other person's reverence and respect for you, like whether it's your mom or your like your friends or anything like that. So I like to kind of put my value as a person on like the relationships that I have with other people that are close and earnest.
That's
and
a good barometer.
Yeah.
I'm not a person who has like a lot of friends, but I'm a person who has a lot of very close knit.
I'm the same way. Yep. You know what I love about this conversation is you don't seem fucked up about it.
No.
You don't seem tortured about it. You don't seem, and I think that people might, you know, when you say sex worker, all these assumptions come into play. Mm-hmm. What is the one thing about being a sex worker that you know of that you want people to know about?
Honestly, you get fucked.
This has been a great program, everybody. Yes. Don't forget to tune
in. That's the tagline for sex worker.
You get fucked.
If there's one thing I could really just convey to people that want to know about sex work is that it's what you put into it. It doesn't, you don't have to be like work in the red light district. You don't have to be online or anything like that. It really is kind of whatever you dictate. But the main thing is be safe. Know someone in the industry that is doing it first and have those lines. You know, I've had so many instances where I haven't felt safe, but I felt safer because someone knows where I am.
How do you what's the routine?
I think
establish boundaries.
We spoke about this, I remember, with Dominique Jackson, and she was talking about the same thing about how, you know other people and you're able to kind of, you know, stay in touch with each other. You can track each other.
Yeah.
It also makes you feel less alone because
they would track each other. Yeah. Dominique was saying that she would never go someplace without telling a girlfriend where she was and everything. So when you were with somebody new, how do you establish the ground rules? Is that in a text beforehand or in meeting somebody?
I used to have like a copy paste text with like what I do, what my rates were, how long it was, for how many like hours or days and everything. Mm-hmm. So I used to do management. So it was just like the less questions that people have to ask, the less questions
frequently
they're going
asked
to ask.
Questions.
Yeah. It was here's like a, it was literally
sheets for my butt. Yes.
Please keep your hands and arms in the vehicles at all times until we
if you have any pacemakers, please make them known now. Turn off any cell phones before, you know what I mean? It was like no recording and all the other stuff. So I would just lay down the ground rules. A lot of times you don't get to talk to this person physically, voice wise or text mm-hmm. over phone.
Yeah.
You learn a lot of tips and tricks along the thing. First thing, if you open the door, they smell like alcohol, get out of there. Two, if they're text messaging you and they say that your rates are too high, get out of there because they're not going to treat you as a person and they don't value you as a person. If they look at your value, they say you're too expensive. They don't care about you. Uh-huh. Third, let's see. One, two, three. Oh, the third one is if they sound shady, don't do it. If they sound shady or you get a vibe, don't do it.
If you get a vibe, you trust that vibe. That alcohol sounds like a hard and fast rule. Were there experiences where you were like, this is sloppy and you're weird and not rational, I'm leaving?
I had a guy who did all three. So I got a bad vibe from him. I answered the door and he was drunk because a lot of straight people, they try to kind of like get through it or get through these urges by getting drunk and losing their inhibition, trying that.
Yeah. Oh
yeah. Don't do that. But,
and you're like, it's just little me. Why are you so scared about it?
He got drunk and I wanted to leave and he blocked the door was starting to get belligerent and violent. So I did what any normal person would do.
You killed him.
Two naked men. I actually grabbed him by the waist and I suplexed him. So I suplexed him over my shoulder and he was like, oh God. And so from there I left.
Wow.
So learn how to suplex people.
I had never done it before,
but I watch a lot of anime.
Okay. Wow. By the way, I love all of those tips, especially for anybody who's listening and is, you know, kind of considering sex work.
Yeah. Or even if you're not really in sex work, I mean, those are pretty good rules anyway.
Know your worth, people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Know your worth. And I don't know if we had this context before, but I'm sober. I don't drink or do drugs. So it's good to be coherent. There's a lot of people. I had a client who would hire other sex workers to have sex with me.
Yeah.
And once he hired a guy that was so drunk, so high, just on poppers that he just couldn't do anything. And he was just not coherent. It felt like he didn't enjoy the situation. Another thing is you have to enjoy having sex with older men. It's going to be a more pleasant situation.
It's all old guys.
It's not all old guys. I used to get like really, I used to get one of my regular clients was like a big buff muscle man that would do bodybuilding competitions. So he was very cute, very attractive. He was the last client I had. And I told that story of my last client at a college recently. Right. So that one's always fun to tell, but, but it's not always older men, but a big plethora of them are older men. They're not unattractive most of the time, but they're just older. Like,
let's take the guesswork out of this and hire a sex worker so that it's guaranteed that this is going to happen.
Yeah. I appreciate that aspect. I love transactional sex that is going to happen.
We are nearing the end of this podcast. Now, there's so much more I want to ask you, but before we wrap up, I want to know, like, when do you make the transition from, because you say you miss it. Mm-hmm. When do you make the transition of, okay, I'm a drag queen now and the sex work is over? And is it over?
Okay. Well, okay. So just going back to my last story, I went to a guy's house in San Francisco. This is after Drag Race, after we filmed, before we get released. So I didn't have any money still. So I still had to pay my rent and everything. I go to this guy's house. He literally looks like, I would say like Schmeagle, but in like an Argyle shirt and like pants. He was a writer and would write books about Asian, like, you know, like Asian, gay Asian sex workers having sex with older men. So that was kind of his thing.
Erotica.
That was his erotica. That was his thing. He was a writer for that.
Great. You're like the spank bank material showing up.
Kind of, but I got him. The first thing he said was, oh, I usually like them a lot fatter than you. And he was like, you're not fat enough. And he just kept like ripping me a new one. He was just like, oh, you're not as pretty as I thought you were going to be. Wow. Which I used to get the compliment that I look better in person, but you know, that's, you know, I'm not holding on to that.
Right.
We get naked and he's just like, are you sure you don't want to do this for $40 less? And literally Schmeagle is there ripping me apart, saying I'm too expensive.
Oh no.
And I'm not fat enough. And I literally just was like, I don't need this. I'm going to go. I'm going to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. You know what? This has been the most delightful conversation. It really has. I say that in all sincerity. I love your openness. I love your, you're so carefree. And
your candor.
You understand. It seems as if you've arrived at an understanding about yourself and who you are, and it's all good.
Well, part of it too is if you're out there listening to this right now and you have a lot of baggage that keeps you down, if you're able to, if you can, you have to really understand that if you've had a very bad childhood, everything is just up from here. Mm-hmm. I've had the worst childhood and experiences possible. Everything just piled on together. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact in my brain, it cannot get any worse than anything I've already experienced. The worst is done. Mm. And it's also just like, if you keep that in mind, then everything is a great experience. Everything is a new day. And it's so good to not be bogged down by those things. It's great to acknowledge them and help you keep moving forward.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's the hot message of the day, Rockham. Thank you so much. Yeah. Where can people find you on your socials?
If you guys want to follow me at all, I am on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter at Rockham Sakura. You can also go to rockhamsakura.com and get some of my merch. If you want to support me, you can go to patreon.com/rockhamsakura. We have lots of tiers in our Patreon that help support all of my amazing, amazing endeavors. They're not amazing, but all of my endeavors. Mm-hmm. Please consider supporting me. I would absolutely love that. And last but not least, if you see me on the street, don't be afraid to say hi. I love saying hi to people. I do. I really do. Sometimes people are like,
I love it.
I'm scared to talk to you. I'm like, girl, I put on a wig on TV for 2 episodes.
We love you. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. Nice meeting you, Matthew. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Wow, Matthew, what an adventure we just went on.
Yes.
That was really, and I love that she was so open and so, so generous. You know, I just love that conversation. I love conversations with people like that. What's your hot message for the day?
I guess I kind of love what Rockham was saying about, you know, reflecting on the shit that happens to you in your life and really recognizing that it can go up from there. I think also just kind of adding on to that is it's a choice for us to frame it that way, because not everybody can experience those kinds of things and have a perspective that there's opportunity for that. But we always have that within reach. And, you know, so if we're able to find that and be able to frame things in that way, then that can help us manage things. So we then can take more of the steps forward so that we can have more of the life that we want. That's what I would say.
Yeah. I mean, tell yourself, I mean, I love that thing. It can only go up.
Yeah.
I love that after the bad experiences.
What's your hot message?
I've learned to never tell myself it can't get any worse.
Right.
That's just bad luck. My message is don't judge yourself. This is my lesson in learning in this conversation today. So what? I think about sex a lot.
Yes.
Big deal.
Yes.
Big deal. I mean, that conversation just made me feel so non-judgmental about who I am.
Great.
It's like, what's the big deal? Yes. Why was I even thinking it was a big deal? I guess because I was on my own. That's it.
Uh-huh.
Where can people find you on your socials, big boy?
You can find me at MJ Dempsey Psych on Instagram. I'm not really using Twitter and Facebook anymore, so don't bother.
You can find me at Alec Mop on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find us both at The Hot Mess Pod on Instagram, and you can leave us messages.
Yes.
If you're listening to the show and you enjoyed it, leave us a great review.
Yeah.
And thank you so much. We love talking about mental health, and we'll be back next week with more Hot Mess fun. We'll see you then.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
This has been a Stage 29 podcast production. The podcast is executive produced by Patty Ciano, Lafern Cusack, and Stephanie Kaysen. Our audio editors are Jackson Ruff and Jonathan DeMatti. Callie Kelts is the social media producer, and a special thanks to the rest of our podcast crew, Rwani Horinage, William Cusack, Lisa Clark, Katie Brown, and Morgan Kaler.
This podcast has been produced by Stage 29 Productions for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast does not constitute medical or professional advice, do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. The views expressed by the hosts and guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. For more information, please go to stage29.tv.